next case for argument is 22-1329, Trinity Manufacturing v. United States. Mr. Gordon, please proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. As an initial matter, let me just say I regret that Mr. Long is unable to join us today and hope he's on the mend soon. This case involves, I'm here today on behalf of Trinity Manufacturing, Ashta Chemicals, and Michelor Chemical Company, three American producers of a chemical called chloropicrin, which is used as an agricultural fumigant for soil. This appeal involves our challenge to a decision by the Department of Commerce to deny a request for a retroactive extension of a deadline, a single deadline missed in the context of an uncontested sunset review. As a result of that, as a result of their decision to deny the request, the Commerce Department has revoked an anti-dumping duty order in its entirety, an order that was in effect for nearly 40 years.
Just out of curiosity, counsel, is your argument here today that Commerce erred as a matter of law in the test it articulated for what constitutes a circumstance under which an extension of time should be given, or that in this case there is a problem with their analysis of the facts, or that alternatively, maybe three choices, or that they argued, or they did something arbitrary and capricious because this case is exactly like lots of other cases where they granted extensions? Precisely define for me what your argument on appeal is, please.
So, as a matter of law, we do not contest the department's regulation, 302C. However, we do challenge their elevation of language of an example from the preamble to that regulation into what amounts to law, regulatory legal requirements. Both the Commerce Department and the Court of International Trade specifically pointed to the fact that in their judgment the circumstances before the agency did not amount to a medical emergency, which is an example, a non-exclusive example listed in the preamble. And so we believe they erred there because a preamble, especially one like this, which was only promulgated with the final rule, does not have force of law. We do believe that the department abused its discretion in failing to weigh relevant factors before the agency, namely the facts and circumstances surrounding the medical issues affecting the individual and his ability to file the submission.
Well, let me ask you just as a threshold matter, are you relying also on the technical issues stuff, or are you relying exclusively on the medical issues?
We're relying on both. The technical issues were a contributing factor as well. The medical issues, which came out only later, I'd say were definitely the bigger portion. And you know, the combination of the two resulted in his inadvertent and unknowing failure to file the submission at issue, which he only realized later.
Well, what the technical issue is, he guesses he couldn't get access to the internet, right? Like, what precisely is the technical issue?
Well, the technical issue
has been clearly presented to Commerce.
Well, it was described as intermittent problems with the internet during the throughout the pandemic.
That would seem to me to cut the other way. In other words, against your client, because if everything's working fine and suddenly the one morning he's supposed to send this, there's a sudden unexpected problem. That's one thing. And the regulation does talk about unexpected. But he says his story is that during the pandemic he had been experiencing problems. So that to me seems to cut the other way. And the other question, I just have another question to add before you respond, which is that, is there any kind of filing receipt that's generated in supply when you file the stuff in Commerce?
There is. Yeah, you receive a filing receipt from the Access.
So he could have easily checked, and I assume some, if not all, or many lawyers file something and then look for the receipt, right?
You receive, to be perfectly honest, you receive an automatically generated confirmation from Access that you've made a submission and that it's been received. Yes.
That's what a lawyer would expect to receive right after the filing, and he did not receive that.
That's my understanding, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sure. Yeah. So, and just to finish the thought, we also believe that the agency's decision here was arbitrary and capricious in light of their decisions in over a dozen cases that we cited where they granted retroactive extensions under circumstances that were far less extraordinary, which is the standard, the extraordinary circumstances requirement. But more to the point, they all involved factual situations that are not identified in the preamble at all.
So the CIT distinguished those cases on the ground that they all involve situations where there was a very short delay in the filing, which is different from the situation here.
Well, I would respectfully disagree with that, because if you look at the situation here, and the filing was due on the 3rd, and the individual genuinely believed he had made the filing to the point where on the 4th he emailed copies of the filing with a note to his client.
So there's no question that he presumably, I mean, I don't think there's much question that he believed it. The question is, did he act appropriately with due diligence, or is there an excuse for him not having checked with, gotten the receipt?
To further the response to one, if I may please, what's important to note here as far as prompt remedial action, if you will, was that he only learned that he had missed the filing on the 14th when he received a copy of Commerce's letter to the International Trade Commission saying they intended to revoke the order.
When you say he only learned, you just told us that every filing is met with a notice that indicates receipt. He's telling us he only learned, but also you have to acknowledge that this record demonstrates he didn't get what every reasonable attorney would expect to get in response to a filing, right?
That's correct. I will say this is where I'll circle back around to that, Your Honor, if I may. But he learned of it on the 14th. Starting on the 15th, the next morning, the 15th, 16th, and 17th, he tried to reach Commerce concerning this problem. No one ever answered the phone, and no one ever returned his messages. That's not contested.
Okay, but I think the CIT is saying something a little different. Saying, you know, if the delay is minimal, Commerce has decided that it has broader discretion to grant these requests. But this is not a situation in which the delay is minimal. So what's your response to that? Is that an accurate characterization of the cases or not?
I would say that if you look at the body of cases involving situations like this, there seems to be a theme. There is a theme running through them as I've read them in ticket, that parties who act promptly to address an error, Commerce tends to exercise its discretion in favor many times of allowing the late filing, even when the circumstances aren't what, in this case, for example, Commerce seems to be requiring as an extraordinary circumstance. What I would respectfully submit, Your Honor, though, is that the representative here did act promptly as soon as he knew. And I know there's, to your point, Chief Judge Moore, you know, there is the question of the receipt from Access. But in this situation, this gentleman was operating with a degree of medical impairment, acute bouts of side effects from an ongoing medical condition. That's also not disputed. And what I envision is someone who is...
Can I interrupt just so you... I know I'm interrupting and I'll let you finish, but I just want you to include this because it's right on what you're saying. You're saying his prompt action, you're starting at September 14th, and certainly on September 18th, he filed the request for an extension, and then you all came in, and on September 25th, you filed a letter in response. I just point out, unless I'm missing something, neither of these requests for an extension made any mention of these medical issues. They were all dealing with a computer glitch. And as far as I could find going through the record, the first mention of the medical issues as basis for granting the extension was October 7th.
That's absolutely correct.
Is that fair? Okay.
That's absolutely correct. And as we laid out in the submission to Commerce on the 7th, in the other filings, and also in our briefs, the representative was reluctant to share sensitive personal medical information at the beginning, and naturally reluctant, I think, to share it with, you know, the Commerce Department, not knowing how it would be received or used.
Counsel, there's a regulation that expressly says that extensions will be given in extraordinary circumstances. And then there's gloss on that regulation that expressly says extraordinary circumstances doesn't include things like internet outages, but it does include things like unexpected medical issues. Your client responded with your assistance on multiple occasions, not all of them with your assistance, because I know you came on after the fact, responded on multiple occasions proffering what amounted to the extraordinary circumstances, all of which were, I had intermittent internet issues. Then only much later does your client bring up the medical issues. Am I going to conclude Commerce abused its discretion in concluding that only these issues, medical issues, were only brought up after the second request for reconsideration, all prior requests based on something the regulation expressly says doesn't amount to extraordinary circumstances, that Commerce abused its discretion when it concluded at the very end, after all of these findings, that this late identification of a medical issue doesn't qualify?
Well, I think the abuse of discretion has another dimension, which is the disproportionate and draconian result that came from it.
In fact, I don't read the Commerce decision as relying on the late disclosure as the reason for rejecting the request. Is that part of what Commerce said?
You mean the lateness of the disclosure of the medical,
the
timing?
As Judge Moore says, there was not prompt disclosure of this medical condition and the role that it played in the late filing. That's a problem. But I guess the question is, was that delay part of Commerce's reasoning? I mean, if they'd said, we're not going to consider this because it took you a month or whatever to come up with the medical reasons, that would be one thing, but I'm not sure that they said that. Did they say that?
They rejected it by saying that the conditions that were described didn't amount to a medical emergency. And that we see the error there as well, because that is elevating a non-exclusive example from the preamble into a regulatory requirement.
Right after they said it didn't amount to a medical emergency, the very next sentence is, furthermore, this medical issue did not preclude Mr. Lewin from timely filing an extension request for the substantive response through all reasonable means. And it goes on to explain how he made multiple other filings during this time without any conflict. So yes, there is a portion where they said this doesn't rise to the level of a medical emergency, but then they did a moreover, which is a second and independent ground for concluding that this doesn't amount to extraordinary circumstances.
And our point with respect to the moreover ground is that he had absolutely no idea that he needed to because he genuinely believed he had made the file.
Yeah, but your answer to Judge Dyke's query, I think you agree, is that the CIT did rely cite and rely on the timing issue as well.
Yes.
Okay.
And the government, that wasn't
my question to you. My question was whether Commerce relied on that. And I don't see this paragraph here as Commerce relying on the delay in advising the medical condition.
I don't disagree with you about that, Your Honor. I'd have to go back and review myself. My preference would be to save some time for rebuttal.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Mr. Gordon. Mr. Long, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Yes, Appendix 110, which is Commerce's denial of the untimely extension request, can only be read as relying. First, they do point out that there's no medical emergency here, but as the court has just covered, the next paragraph explains the fact that there's been no connection demonstrated between the claimed medical issue and the inability to timely file an extension request.
Okay, but that's not the question that I was asking. There was delay in surfacing the medical issue, but I don't read Commerce's decision as rejecting the request on the ground that there was delay in raising the medical issue to it after the failure to file. Am I correct about that? And if so,
yes, Your Honor. Yes, we read it the same way. That's right. The focus is the lack of connection, and that's the point I was trying to make. It's that lack of connection is Commerce's focus, not the delay in bringing up the issue. It's true that there
and
were
even
two
if the am I right that even if the Court of International Trade relied on the length of time in deciding Commerce was okay, it's kind of irrelevant because we reviewed de novo the same thing they did. So we can put that issue to the side and just focus on this issue you and I were just talking about, which is whether or not Commerce adequately has a basis for having concluded the medical issue did not preclude Mr. Lewin from making filings.
Absolutely correct, Your Honor. That's right. And so, again, it's really the lack of connection that was shown that was Commerce's focus. And on the record here, based on the former representative's declaration and the other information in the record, That conclusion was not an abuse of discretion. It was rightly and rationally based on what was presented to the agency.
So what I read his declaration.
Only other point I'll raise can you hear other situations.
Counsel.
The court was clear.
Counsel.
In this sort of area, these untimely extension requests, these cases need to be taken on the facts. And so, for example, with respect to one of the examples that my friend Mr. Gordon.
Go ahead. We heard you the whole time, but you couldn't hear us when we were trying to ask you questions. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Judge Dyke.
My understanding of this declaration that the former counsel submitted was that basically as a result of my medical condition, I was confused on that morning. I thought I had sent it, but in fact I hadn't. And I'm looking at the furthermore paragraph in the Commerce's decision, and I'm not understanding how this is really responsive to what he's saying. He says the medical issue didn't preclude him from timely filing an extension request. Well, yes, it did if he didn't know that he hadn't filed. So that's really kind of off point, isn't it?
I think what Commerce is attempting to express here is the point that what you raise, which is the lack of knowledge by the prior representative, hadn't been explained given that he was able to complete other work on that day. We also talked a little bit about the fact that there would have been an access notice. That's Commerce's system. He would have gotten one. That's not mentioned here by Commerce, but the two facts don't reconcile. His claim of not knowing and the fact that he was able to complete other work. And it's that lack of understanding or explanation of how both could be true that led Commerce to conclude that there's no extraordinary circumstance here.
You mean that they sort of doubted his declaration where he said he was confused on that morning because of his medical condition?
I don't think they're challenging the fact of his statement that he was confused here. I don't think they're disputing that in this at Appendix 110. I think what's being said is, okay, but how then were you able to work on other things and not?
I mean, but isn't that
also
the confusion? You can be confused about one thing but do something else at the same time. It doesn't seem to me that being confused necessarily leads to a situation where you're completely incompetent to perform any tasks.
Yes, I understand that, but it's still I think Congress's choice here to question how he was unable to complete this particular task when he completed others doesn't rise to an abuse of discretion on these facts, even given that, like I said, we're not challenging. Congress didn't challenge the facts stated in the declaration.
The decision here does seem to be inconsistent with some of these other decisions, which may be distinguishable on the ground that they involve less of a lapse of time. But the grounds that they accepted in these other decisions seem to be the very grounds here that they say are not acceptable, right? I mean, there's an inconsistency there, no?
Well, Your Honor, as I was mentioning earlier, when I unfortunately couldn't hear the court, in Don Tyke, the court noted that each situation needs to take on its face, and Congress, of course, rejects many untimely extension requests in addition to accepting them. And I'll point out that in particular, aluminum extrusions, which was the only example that, the companies didn't raise any of these examples before Commerce. The only one raised in their opening brief at CIT was aluminum extrusions from China. And as the Court of International Trade pointed out, no one here knows what the medical issue was in that case. And so that just highlights the fact that these are unique circumstances and need to be taken on the whole set of facts. Those whole set of facts haven't been presented here. And it really is a question of whether Commerce's decision with respect to this regulation is rational in a given case.
Okay, but it may be that the result in these other cases can be reconciled with the result here. But the reasoning that Commerce articulated in these other decisions seems to be inconsistent with the reasoning here. Isn't that correct?
Well, I suppose I would say that I read the statute, 19 CFR 351.302, as focused on the reasons for the untimely request and what circumstances precluded the filing of the timely request.
Focus specifically on my question. Isn't the reasoning of these other decisions inconsistent with the reasoning here?
I don't think we know the full extent of the reasoning. We don't know the full extent of the reasoning in the other case.
I mean, what they said seems inconsistent with what they said here. They seem to have accepted reasons that they now say are precluded.
Counsel, do you have any idea what case Judge Dyke is talking about? I'm not sure. I just would like to keep up. What case are you and Judge Dyke talking about right now where he's asking you if the reasons there were the same as the reasons here?
Well, the appellants have raised a number of cases in the red brief.
Well, yeah, but I just want to keep up with wherever this conversation is. You've been asked a question and you're going back and forth on whether the reasoning in some mystery other case, which I would like to know what case it is.
It's not one case, it's several.
Well, let's pick one, counsel. Let's pick one case and let's talk about it then. Whatever case, I don't care.
I'm sorry, I was talking about aluminum extrusions from China, which is the only one that the company brought up in their moving brief at the CIT.
And in that case, did Commerce say, counsel experienced serious and unexpected medical issues which required hospitalization and extended recuperation period? Is that part of that case?
I am not sure where the court is looking, and I apologize, I'm not certain the answer to that.
Let's take, for example, on page 31 of the blue brief, the circular welded case. It was a miscommunication with clerical staff, and apparently in documents being uploaded to Access. Those are the kinds of excuses that Commerce in this decision say don't qualify, right?
Well, not exactly. These are obviously different facts. I'll point out that the companies that
carbon and steel alloy. Pipe on the next page.
Can I just ask, just so I can follow along, are these cases, Judge Sansu cited a lot in his footnote.
These are on 31 and 32 of the blue book.
And are these, just for clarification, are these also the ones that Judge Sansu distinguished?
No.
So these are new and different. Do we know if these cases were ever presented to either Commerce or the CIT?
No, these were not. None of these were presented to Commerce.
And what about the CIT? Was this one of the 13 you provided in the reply brief?
The company brought up the aluminum extrusions from China in their opening brief at the CIT. We responded, and they brought up all of the remainder in their reply brief for the first time. And then I believe that if you take the combination of what the aluminum extrusions from China and all the cases that were in their reply brief at the CIT, I believe that that whole group has now come over into the blue brief. I believe that's right. But again, none of these were presented to Commerce.
Okay, but you also didn't object at the CIT for what you now say was the delayed reliance on this.
Yes, at the time of our response brief, that is true. At the time of our response brief, only aluminum extrusions from China had been raised. We saw the reply brief. The court issued a decision without hearing oral argument, and so we did not object to the raising of this. But it's still true, the raising of all of them, but it's still true that none of them were presented to Commerce. So there's a question of whether Commerce acted arbitrarily and capriciously. Well, I think it's difficult to make that conclusion if the companies had never presented to Commerce the reasons why they thought that these were analogous circumstances. Obviously, an agency should try to administer its regulations in a consistent way, but it can't guess what the companies would view as analogous situations, as opposed to the myriad of circumstances where Commerce denied that. And if there are no further questions, we respectfully ask that the court affirm the judgment of the Court of International Trade.
All right, thank you, counsel. Mr. Gordon, you have some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. A couple of cleanup follow-up points. The cases that we describe in our blue brief were all discussed by Judge Stansu in the footnotes to the decision. These are the cases that he sought to distinguish on the basis of the number of days passing before the request was made.
But no, they were not before Congress. There's no dispute about that.
No, that's correct. But I would like to pause for a moment on the aluminum extrusions case, because we did cite that in our opening brief, and it is actually very analogous to the case at hand. And in that case, a retroactive extension was granted.
I'm finding difficulty how it's analogous here. What we have from Commerce in terms of rationale is, based on the extraordinary circumstances discussed in your letter, we're granting your requested extension. And we go to the letter, and it explains that the attorney at issue experienced serious unexpected medical issues which required hospitalization and extended recuperation, during which she was unable to work consistently. That is both unexpected, and it is at least alleged to be imminent, and had a direct response on her ability to work altogether. How is that analogous? I mean, how can we say Commerce arbitrarily and capriciously denied in this case, when the medical issues your client was experiencing were not unexpected, but were persistent and intermittent? Is that a fair characterization?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Yeah, so persistent and intermittent, so not unexpected, did not require hospitalization, correct? And he made other filings during that time.
So, to your point, what you just read wasn't the situation that gave rise to the missed deadline for aluminum extrusions. The next sentence says, even as he has returned to work in recent weeks, his schedule has been uncertain and part-time. As a result of these medical issues, he was unable to timely file an extension request or delegate this responsibility to another attorney.
Yeah, so I'll grant you that maybe that sentence means what you just suggested it means, but it's not clear to me it does. I don't know enough about this case to know whether he missed the deadline while he was in the hospital or whether he missed the deadline after he returned to work.
No, with all due respect, Your Honor, it's obvious. It says even as he has returned to work in recent weeks, and this says required, even as he's returned to work in recent weeks, he's clearly back in the office. His schedule has been uncertain and part-time. As a result of these medical issues, he was unable to timely file a request or delegate the responsibility to another attorney. That's highly analogous to the situation here. Both parties had medical issues a while back. Both were recovering, getting back to work, and both had apparently some kind of detrimental side effects which rendered them unable to timely file an extension request or delegate the response. It's even more egregious in the aluminum extrusions case, because as opposed to a sole practitioner trying to get his work done here, you have someone who's part of Sidley & Austin. It's a huge firm. And you're telling me that they couldn't delegate the responsibility to another attorney, and Commerce still found that was sufficient circumstances to provide a retroactive extension? And moreover, I'll note that the consequences of the decision in this case are far more extreme than pretty much any other case you'll see. Typically, when you see a response get rejected and Commerce resort to total adverse facts available, that's in the context of a review. And in that situation, the party literally lives to fight another day. Here, you've talked about revocation of an order, which means that if the domestic industry wishes to regain the protections of that order, they're going to have to file and litigate and win. And actually, they're going to have to be injured before they do that to obtain relief. This is a dramatically disproportionate, draconian outcome under the circumstances here of a single...
Is that one of the criteria that Congress required Commerce to take into account in deciding whether to grant extensions?
Well, this court has held that an abuse of discretion arises when the agency fails to properly weigh relevant factors. This is a relevant factor in this case.
No, Commerce decides what the relevant factors are. We've expressly said Commerce has the discretion to determine under what circumstances it will grant extensions of time. It's not for us to articulate the factors they must consider. Congress delegated them broad authority. We've affirmed that broad authority. Is there some reason we now need to say to them, for example, I don't see prejudice having been discussed in this decision, and I don't see it discussed in most of the other decisions. Is there some reason you want us to say, which is, this is exactly why I started with, do you have a problem with Commerce's legal test? And you said no.
That's correct.
Because Commerce's legal test in the regulation does not currently require prejudice to be considered as part of the analysis. But right now, the argument you appear to be making, which the government will have no opportunity to respond to, and you didn't make in your opening argument, is Commerce erred because of the draconian nature, a la the prejudice. Do you understand the problem I'm having with that argument? You're raising it only in rebuttal. The government doesn't have a chance to respond, and it's a totally different argument, and you started with me by saying, I'm not disagreeing with Commerce's articulation of the test.
Well, I believe we did touch on it in our opening argument. I'd have to go back and review the transcript. Certainly wasn't trying to sandbag anyone with an argument, for sure.
I take a little longer, just going back to what we were talking about in terms of these comparable situations, or arguably comparable situations. Understand, none of these cases were cited to Commerce. And then you go to the CIT, and you don't cite them in your initial thing, so the government doesn't have a chance to, you cite one, and the government has a chance to respond to that one, but not to the others. And then in your final brief, you add another 12 cases which you consider comparable. And it's kind of a waiver argument, but when was the government supposed to be able to respond? I guess, are you saying because they didn't file a motion to strike, then they've waived their ability to argue about that? I'm just trying to clarify what this waiver thing is.
Well, our position is that they engaged on it substantively in their response brief,
in their response brief, they only had the one case. You had the final filing. I thought these 12 comparable things came in your final brief, and they didn't have an opportunity to respond, and they didn't have oral argument. Am I missing something?
No, you're absolutely correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they didn't have an opportunity to respond. So are you saying that we required to consider it, and they can't file an objection or a waiver argument because they were required to file a motion to strike?
Well,
or something like that? I don't know. I want to see it.
Our position is they engaged in it substantively at the Court of International Trade. The court itself addressed the issue on the merits in its opinion. It's appropriate to, continue making the argument here in this court. And even if there were an exhaustion claim that had been made, and it has not been made, we would submit that it would have been futile for us to raise these at the Commerce Department, given the counsel's own position that these are all individual fact-based determinations.
Yeah, it's hard for us, though, right? I mean, because of the standard of review and our reviewing customs, we have this unusual thing that we've lived with for 30 years. But, I mean, if we're reviewing Commerce's abuse of discretion by Commerce, it's kind of an unusual circumstance.
I don't disagree. I'm significantly over my time, I believe. Yep. Unless the court has any questions.
Well, I thank both counsels for their arguments. The case is taken under submission.